NWP Radio.
You're listening to NWP Radio, a production of the National Writing Project.
NWP.
Welcome, listeners. This is NWP Radio, a production of the National Writing Project. Today is Thursday, January 25th, 2017, and tonight we're talking with NWP site leaders about what it means for teachers to take their practice public and how we provide forms and supports to help that happen. I'm your host, Tanya Baker, at the NWP in Berkeley, California. Tonight, we are welcoming Bob Fetcho, a professor at Teachers College and former Writing Project director and teacher consultant. Mitch Nobis, curriculum support teacher in Metro Detroit and co-director of the Red Cedar Writing Project. And Rachel Baer, senior program associate at the National Writing Project. Thank you all for being here tonight.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for having us.
Very pleased to be here.
I'm very pleased to be able to talk with the three of you about this practice, which is very near and dear to my heart and to the Writing Project work in general and to all the ways that you are enacting it out in the wide world. I'd like to start by naming a really traditional Writing Project practice for taking our teaching public, and that's the teaching demonstration. Most anyone likely to be listening to NWP Radio is also likely to know about the teaching demo. Our website describes it in this way. Teacher demonstrations are a distinctive feature of the Summer Invitational Institute. Teacher demonstrations honor teachers' expertise by putting their knowledge of practice on equal footing with research and professional literature. Demonstrations are designed to share the knowledge that comes from practice, inquire about the relationship between theory and practice, and stimulate a professional conversation about the teaching of writing. Sites take special care in supporting teachers as they select an appropriate and challenging demo topic, coaching them as they craft their demo, and after they give it, debriefing it. Teacher demos are central to the Writing Project model because they lay the groundwork for expertise in in-service and continuity programming. Now, before we jump into all the things we've brought here to talk about today as other ways of taking our teaching practice public, each of you have experience as an NWP teacher consultant and in a role where you work with teacher consultants as a coach or mentor. What, if anything, would you want to say about your experience with teaching demonstrations? Any of you?
I could jump in real quick and just kind of say that I think the teaching demo is really at the heart of the whole NWP model. You know, you talk to an NWP teacher out there in the world and we get really, you know, we wax poetic about the experience. And I think a big part of it is the teaching demonstration for most people is the first time they take their practice public. Mm-hmm. And for years I was a returning TC in our summer institute. So I would coach, you know, a handful of people every summer on their teaching demonstration and people would just like anybody, you know, they've done studies and fear of public speaking outranks fear of death, right? Like it comes in first in the biggest phobia. So people would freak out, of course, that they have to do a teaching demonstration. And I would just always default to it. It's the friendliest room you're ever going to play to. And it's going to revolutionize the way you think about teaching. So just jump in and do it.
Nice.
What I think about is interesting about the teaching demonstrations is that if you go to any NWP site, there's some version of a teaching demonstration. And by that, I mean, everybody's doing something that's called a teaching demonstration or is along those lines. Red Clay Writing Project, we called it the teaching exploration. Mm-hmm. But each site then has its own spin on it also. So there's commonality across all the sites, but yet every site sort of brings something of their own ideas to that. And that's what I think makes the teaching demonstrations and the writing project in particular work, because there's not a model, there's a framework which with everybody then brings their own spin to it.
Nice. So we're gonna unpack those ideas that underlie the teaching demonstration, and I love the way each of you have talked about it. And just get remember that the demonstration, as Bob said, could look different. Even the demonstration as we've named it can look different across sites, and each site has brought ways of doing it or different emphases to it. But the importance is that it allows teachers opportunity to share their practice, to inquire about the relationship between theory and practice, to stimulate a professional conversation about teaching, and to prepare teachers to take up leadership by offering in-service or continuity or going into other forums, as Mitch might say, less, perhaps less friendly than this one, but with their teaching practice out in front of them in public. So with these kind of goals of the teaching demonstration in mind, what we'd love to do today is think about all the other places that we might see NWP teachers with opportunities and taking advantage of those opportunities to take their teaching public. I think we'll start with Mitch. Mitch, if you could come in and begin by introducing yourself and your history with the Writing Project and with writing in public about your teaching.
Yeah, be happy to. And I really like that you started off by talking about the teaching demonstration, because I think that really does, for me anyways, it served as sort of a kicking off point. Oh my gosh, I'm very sorry. We've got a phone call here. One second. Sorry about that. You get everything ready and then something.
Exactly.
My son's downstairs watching Star Wars. I got that part covered. it opened a floodgate for me in a sense of sharing my practice, because I did play to a friendly room. I was, as terrified as anybody is. And then you get lots of really nice feedback on your teaching, and you realize like, oh, this is a way to get better at my craft quickly. It's like steroids or something for pedagogy. Like, you get that quick feedback and analysis and ways of thinking about your practice, and then that, for me, that led to seeking it out in different places. But I'm jumping ahead of myself. You asked me to introduce myself. So I'm from the Red Cedar Writing Project, which is located at Michigan State University. And I'm in my 20-somethingth year in education, 22nd or 23rd, something like that. Most of that time was spent in a high school English classroom, and I'm currently transitioned into a district-wide curriculum position. As I was telling Tanya before we turned on the microphones, that I sit down a lot for my job, which is a big change. I'm not talking to kids all day long, but I'm working with other adults in our district largely through email. So a bit of a transition, but a fun one. I got introduced to the NWP world in 1999. That's when I did a summer institute at Red Cedar. So, a century ago, give or take. And it really did change who I am as a teacher. And it was largely that finding that network and that place to share practice. There are pros to that, positives to that kind of K-12 mantra of close your door and teach, but there are real cons to it also. It can be very isolating. And I found the sharing of practice to be just revolutionary for me. And I'm very happy to see some trends in our culture to move a little bit away from that. Teacher labs are getting more common in places, and even just in my own life, I know more people who are submitting proposals for conference presentations and things like that, and getting their craft out there in public. And that's really good to see. I hate to see people just hunker down in treat their classroom like a bunker instead of sharing practice and pushing themselves, pedagogically speaking. And then I just stuck around Red Cedar. It impacted me so largely that I kept coming back to continuity events, and over time, thank God, the former director, Janet Swenson, I think she basically said, well, if this guy's going to keep coming back, we might as well put him to work. And then I was a returning teacher consultant for the better part of a decade at our summer institute. And now I'm one of our co-directors. And it's fed me literally and figuratively, because, we always have chocolate at our events, but it also keeps me going as a teacher and as just a person. I do think of myself as a writer as well. So that kind of middle ground of teaching and writing really does meet kind of the two largest slices of my personality. So it keeps me going.
Great. So when we were planning this show, and we were putting together a list of guests, I was working with Bud the teacher, Bud Hunt, and he said, you really need somebody who's, out in social media, blogging or tweeting or writing about their practice. And I said, oh, what about Mitch Nobis? And he said, yeah, like that. That'd be perfect. And I was a little embarrassed to remember that you, several years ago, were one of the first teachers whose work I read about regularly on social media. And the first time I met you, which was at a spring meeting, I believe, this is the part that was embarrassing. I was totally fangirling you. Oh my God, there's Mitch Nopis. I know all about what he teaches and does in his classroom. besides embarrassing things like that, I wonder if you could tell us a little bit about your history of putting your work out in public in these digital spaces.
Yeah, I'd be happy to. And I hope I lived up to the hype that my digital persona had laid out there.
Clearly, I mean, here you are on NWP Radio.
Well, true. I have made it to the bright lights. I think, again, Red Cedar is going to play a very central role in my answer. It really has ended up, you know, playing a critical role in my life in various ways. This would also be a very quick point, place to put in the side note that I met my wife through Red Cedar Writing Project. So it really has changed my life for the better. No, Red Cedar was always an early adopter for digital writing spaces. We would hold advanced institutes on writing in digital environments. And anytime something new came along, we, instead of saying like, oh, another new tool, we would think like, well, how can we use this in classrooms or in our own summer institutes and things like that? So think back to those heady early days of the web 2.0 and, you know, Blogspot and stuff like that was brand new, digital storytelling. We held a digital storytelling institute when you had, I mean, CD-ROMs. We're plugging in machines the size of your oven just to try to make digital stories. I'm aware how old that makes me sound, and I'm okay with it. So you go back to like 2004, 2005, 2006, that range. And I ended up getting into kind of traditional blogging, what almost seems like a previous lifetime at this point, because very few people do it anymore. And I really got into it because I did in my own academic work and personal life, I've always been very into comics as a younger person. I learned to read my brother's Incredible Hulk comics. And then when I went to Michigan State to get a master's degree, I ended up studying them as, you know, teaching tools, you know, as a form of literacy. And I found that blogging was a really nice way to kind of combine those two, the image and text. You know, I really liked the way they interplay and blogging allowed for that. To go back to the teaching demo, you know, I'd gotten comfortable with sharing my practice and the benefits of bouncing an idea out there. Like, hey, I just read this great op-ed in the Sunday paper. What if, you know, we used it this way or that way? And just kind of through the hive mind of social media, ended up getting some good ideas for the classroom over the years. And then kind of long story short, how did I get to into the digital writing, I guess, you know, like all of us, we go to college and you're writing these big essays, you know, 20 page term paper, things like that. But I'd always really enjoyed brief forms, poetry. You know, I still write poetry for enjoyment, and I'm a sports fan. So I've been reading the sports section in Sports Illustrated my whole life. So you get used to these kind of short blasts of text. And writing for a digital environment, you're told to make your paragraphs, you know, three sentences instead of 13, you know, that sort of thing. And I found that really appealing because I'd kind of been training for that in some ways via poetry and comics and sports and a lot of these sort of shorter forms. You know, mix that together in a mixing bowl with the teaching demonstration and the notion that putting your practice out there in public can help you get better ideas faster. And I was just really drawn to the digital environment.
Nice. It seems to me too, and you can tell me if I'm wrong, but it will lead us into our next question as well, but that in a way, the sort of short form writing about your practice, at least, and maybe this is also true in the sports world too, feels more like entering into a conversation that's going to keep going. You're going to say a little, other people are going to say a little. It's in a way that writing a thesis or a, it always feels like you have to be definitive.
Yes.
Like the space that's open to beginning conversations or participating in conversations about practice.
Yeah. And that ties to a piece of advice I've given to others who, you know, when people ask me, how do I use social media for teaching? I always encourage folks to just think of it as first draft. You know, some people will agonize over things they're putting out there in public. And, you know, yes, a conference presentation, you should probably take more than 5 minutes to prepare, but a Facebook post or a tweet or you know, it's a thing on Instagram, you know, whatever. Like, first draft is the accepted practice. You know, if you're seeking ideas, like, hey, I might try using this poem tomorrow. Any ideas? Like, people know you're just tossing ideas out there into the Twitter sphere and seeking feedback. So yeah, don't worry about the first draft nature. That is the default mode of those places.
And speaking of Twitter, it does feel like you, Mitch, have, I see you in Twitter a lot. It seems to be kind of a home for your presence, at least around your teaching presence. Can you say a little bit about that? What happens there? Who's your community? Why Twitter?
Yes, be glad to. Twitter is definitely my preferred social media platform. It's really kind of where I live digitally at this point in time. And it really connects to that brevity. I was kind of furious when they increased to 280 characters. I loved the 140 characters. And it's for personal reasons. You know, I became a parent in 2010 and there was no longer any time left for extended blog entries and trying to write articles to submit for publication. It's like, no, I have, you know, 3 minutes here, 30 seconds there. And I found that also really fits the teacher life. You know, a lot of my Twitter checking is done on lunch break, right? While you're making copies, those 5 minutes waiting for a set of copies to run, you can just, you know, flip out your phone and check, you know, some get Bud the teacher's great new ideas of the day, you know? And that really drew me back because I could fit it into these very short periods of time that I now had in my life. And I also, you know, my communities, you know, you asked, what am I doing there? You know, like, what's my community? I really am keeping a foot in a couple of different worlds, which I think is part of what keeps drawing me back to Twitter. You know, and you go over to Facebook, you get a very different rhetorical context. You get family, you get people, you know, your high school ex, you know, stuff like that, different audiences that I find you see on Twitter. And that's great. Like, I really do like to see what my distant relatives are up to, but not necessarily while I'm making copies at work. When I'm at work, my brain is thinking pedagogy. I'm thinking teaching. I'm thinking writing. And I'm thinking of the connections between the two. And Twitter allows me to tailor my rhetorical context a little bit more to that. So I follow other teachers and I follow writers who I admire. And kind of my new favorite universe to explore out there in Twitter is other people kind of like us, folks who enjoy writing but aren't Malcolm Gladwell. You know, who aren't world-renowned writers yet, but are, you know, have some pieces that they might think about pursuing publication for, but aren't sure how. Like, there's a lot of folks like that out there, and I find that really interesting and energizing. And just like sharing teaching practice, you know, there's other people in your same boat that you can bounce ideas off of, and I find that relieving, but also fun and intriguing. So mostly, I like Twitter because it's short and because of the rhetorical context of you're an audience, but also a speaker in really interesting ways. You know, I often think of the Aristotelian triangle, you know, so your speaker and audience and in different communities and in ways that can happen quickly and weird little nooks in your day. So it's just a perfect fit for me at this point in time. I'd like to think that someday I'll have time to sit down and write a 3-hour essay again. That time is not now. I've got a 7-year-old and a 3-year-old. So for now, it's Twitter.
You will. But that's great. We're all glad that you're out writing in the short form right now. I wonder if you would speak to a teacher audience of maybe about what you think is a benefit for a teacher of sharing your work in these places and in these ways.
I think with social media in particular, it can kind of help keep that vibe of a National Writing Project Summer Institute going, that notion of teaching as a public practice, as an interaction, not just something that happens behind closed doors. And it can happen throughout the day. You know, think about a middle school or a high school teacher's schedule. Well, they've got 5-minute breaks here and there between classes. They've got, you know, their lunch break. They've got 10 minutes between, you know, sixth hour and the staff meeting. So there are these little places where you can fill that space with professional development, really. And that's really how I got started on Twitter. And then the longer I was there, the more I developed communities with other teachers in the National Writing Project and the National Council of Teachers of English and some other folks who just enjoy writing and kind of finding these different sort of neighborhoods to hang out in. And so for teachers who are thinking about it, I really recommend just getting that teacher community started for yourself. Don't go in with any lofty expectations, like this great thing's going to happen. Like, no, it's just talking shop. It's sort of like always having your own teacher's lounge handy in your phone. You know, you can find really like-minded people, but they're from Oklahoma, not Michigan, like me, right? Like you make these cool connections across distance, which can really lead to some tremendous benefits. It's really just like the National Writing Project. It's a powerful network, right? Like you're not just talking to the person next door who's great, but they're in the exact same context as you. So if you had a really lousy staff meeting and you're feeling bummed about the state of education, your neighbor is going to feel the same way, but you might have a teacher colleague that you've met via social media who is all the way out in San Francisco, who has a much better view of things, or a different view at least of things. And sometimes they also had a terrible day for the same reasons. And you can commiserate and know that, oh, all the whole country is dealing with, you know, side effects of standardized testing or the impact of grades on student motivation. You know, this isn't just in my own local context. So I think that ends up boosting the professionalism of teachers. You know, we tend to get kind of kicked often and we shut our doors as a result. And then you can go to social media and find that, no, we really are professionals. There are other people out there thinking the same thing. They're thinking critically. They're thinking, you know, how can we help our students? How can we fight these battles to make our kids, you know, faster, better, stronger thinkers? And it's really empowering as a result.
Nice. So Mitch, we're just about out of time, but I don't want to leave this portion of the show without acknowledging that we would actually like to have you on again soon to talk about another example of going public with your practice. And that's in your somewhat recently published book, Real Writing, Modernizing the Old School Essay. We'd love to get you and your co-authors onto another episode of NWP Radio to talk about that project. But for now, could you tell us a little bit about that book and, you know, maybe briefly say one thing about whether there's a connection or a through line that connects your daily public writing and reading about practice to your having written that book?
Yeah, absolutely. It really is sort of the culmination of a lot of these different threads, you know, kind of coming together in sort of a nexus of worlds here. So you take this whole notion of getting your practice out there in the public. This book, if you track it all the way back, came about from a conference presentation. The five of us submitted a proposal for a National Council of Teachers of English session on basically getting away from formulaic writing. And our whole kind of central thesis was that we need to be in the writing world. We need to think of writing as a rhetorical act and not as an academic performance or as just a formula or as a thing to be memorized. So it really very much so connects to this notion of daily writing and daily reflection on your practice. And that ultimately led to this book that we co-authored on, you know, how can teachers get away from the formulas and how can we allow our students to actually form their own arguments in our contemporary world instead of just responding to prompts all the time, as you say, our tests often ask them to do. You know, real essays do real things. They don't just respond to text questions. So that's kind of the elevator pitch version of the book. All five of the co-authors are National Writing Project teacher consultants. So it really did kind of come out of both the face-to-face network and the digital network that arises out of this universe.
Nice. Thank you, Mitch. I think that your example gives listeners a lot to think about, and particularly about how to use these platforms, particularly Twitter, as a way to share practice that allows us to share knowledge and stimulate a professional conversation about teaching. So next, let's bring in Bob to share another online platform dedicated to this practice of going public as well. Bob, if you don't mind, could you introduce yourself, your history with the Writing Project, and writing in public about your teaching?
Oh, hi, Tanya. Good to see you again. And I started in 1987 in the first summer institute of the Philadelphia Writing Project. And was a TC in Philadelphia for a long time until around 1998. And that's when I got a job at the University of Georgia. And I went there. They had no writing project. So I got together once I got tenure. I got together with Jo Beth Allen, and the two of us developed the Red Clay Writing Project, and it's now being capably run by Stephanie Jones and Hillary Hughes. But I was with them for about 10 years before coming up here to Teachers College. Judy Buchanan, I just had lunch with Judy and a number of the other Philwood folk last week, and she reminded me of an incident in my teaching life that involved teacher research. And I was, in that first writing project, I was talking about the teacher-student writing conferences that I was doing in high schools, and this is 1987. And so it was suggested that I videotape them, which I did. Well, you have to remember, in 1987, video cameras were these humongous things that sat on your shoulder. You were very intrusive, but I ended up, so I was experimenting with the video and how to do it with ways that didn't alarm the students that I was working with, and how to watch a lot of these videotapes. And as I was watching them, I began, you know, I saw some good things that are occurring in the conferences, things I like, but boy, it also, you know, I look at a conference and I say, I really railroaded that conference. I was just pushing this kid in one direction, or gee, I didn't pick up on that idea that they were talking about. And part of me just wanted to take these and scrap them. Mm-hmm. But Judy and Judy Buchanan and Susan Lytle, who were running the writing project, both said, no, Bob, this is practice. Practice is messy. This is what goes on. Good things happen in classrooms, and there are struggles. And we have to be able to look at that entire spectrum. You know, it's that what is happening here? Okay, and there are good things happening here, but there are also struggles happening here. And it's those struggles very often that we learn from. So that's sort of how I got involved in that narrative inquiry and looking closely at one's practice.
And so since I'm apparently going to use this show to out myself about all my fangirling, I believe the first annual meeting I ever went to, you were presenting a session on narrative inquiry that blew my mind. And I've sort of followed your work ever since seeing that that presentation. I'm wondering if you can tell us a little, anything else you'd like to share about this way of working with teachers to make practice public.
Well, again, it's, you know, a lot of this is what garden you've grown up in, right? And I landed in the Philadelphia Writing Project, and there was Judy Buchanan, who had been involved with the Teachers Learning Cooperative and bringing those ideas of Pat Cronini and looking closely at student work. And then there's Susan Lytle and Marilyn Cochran Smith, you know, who just ignited, along with a number of others, the whole teacher research movement. And it was almost like you couldn't help but think about looking at your classroom with eyes that were critical to look what was going on here, what was happening here. So it became an important way of working, of thinking about what are you seeing here, and seeing the classroom as a data-rich space. And a place, again, where things happen that cause you to wobble. And the whole idea of what's going on here, what's happening, why is that student acting out, or why is that student suddenly working well in the classroom? You know, what does that policy mean for what we're going to do here? So then developing protocols for looking at work so that, you know, we all have stories. Teachers can make you cry. We can make you laugh. You get a bunch of teachers together. We can spend all night telling our stories of classrooms, and that's fine. But unless we have a way of looking at those stories, of thinking about them, of unpacking them, of reflecting on them, then they're just stories that entertain us. But really, they're powerful ways of thinking about practice. And so ever since then, I've done work with looking at what happens in classrooms, and particularly around the power of story. You know, they have Jerome Bruner's work and Robert Cole's work about stories and how powerful stories have been throughout humankind's history. And so, you know, we learn through story, we learn through metaphor. So that idea of using story and thinking about it in reflective, systematic ways helps us think about it.
That's awesome. Thank you. I should also say we have co-published with Teachers College Press several examples of your helping teachers tell stories about their practice and then unpack them. And we can put links to those stories up with this show as well, or those books. But what I really want you to talk about, I'm so excited about, is a new iteration of your work helping teachers unpack their stories in these public spaces is your website, Story, Storri. Can you tell us what that is, please?
Yeah, Story, as she spelled it, Storri, and don't ask me what the acronym is because I've sort of forgotten anymore. It doesn't really matter. It's the fact that it's Story. Is a website designed to attract, share, and unpack, engage, and celebrate stories of wobble that teachers tell about the complexity of contemporary classrooms. Through Story, teachers and teacher educators, you know, have opportunities to write about moments in their practices when their belief systems wobble. And what we mean by wobble is that something happened in the classroom that compelled you to pay attention, to stop and think, to raise a question, to open yourself to other perspectives. Where wobble began for me, curiously enough, was in 1987 at the Hotel Figueroa in Los Angeles, California. I was packing to leave from a conference, NCTE. And as I was packing to leave, on the seventh floor of the hotel, and I looked up and I noticed that the ceiling tiles were vibrating. And I thought to myself, ceiling tiles aren't supposed to vibrate. And then I felt the building just sway, just like I've been in the ocean. Okay, and then by the time I kind of put all the points together, swaying, vibrating, Los Angeles, California, I figured that we were getting earthquake tremors, which is what we were. Fortunately, it was just a aftershock, but then it made me think, what do you do? I'm on the seventh floor of the Figueroa Hotel. Do I run into the bathroom? Do I go into a closet? Do I try and go down all the stairs and get outside? What's the best thing? Wobble makes you pay attention. Mm. If you're riding a bicycle and the front wheel is wobbling, you have to stop and do something. You have to think about it. What's going on here? If you're visiting your great aunt and you bump into her Tiffany lamp and it starts to wobble, you got to quickly pay attention to that and think about what are the consequences? What should I do? What should happen here? In your classroom, there are innumerable moments of wobble. Things happen. Teaching, as Susan and Judy made clear to me, is a messy, complex activity. And we need to be able to celebrate and inquire into that messiness and that complexity. We have to look at these moments of wobble and say, what are we learning through them?
So I know you've worked with teachers face-to-face with lots of opportunities to unpack their stories of wobble. Why did you decide to make this website?
Well, because I can only reach so many people face-to-face. I think that's a good part of it. But by collecting these stories, we hope to provide other angles on classrooms. Ones that show the inner workings between teachers and students. I mean, there's this vision out there in the media of, if you look at any movie, you watch any movie about teaching, and students are almost always sitting in straight rows. So the teacher at the front, and it's this sort of 1950s father knows best view of what teaching is. And that's still the one that's ingrained in everybody's mind. Teaching is so much more complex and interesting, and there are so many other possibilities in that. There's also things that go on in classrooms that many people don't remember or understand about them, about what happens and what occurs there. So, and that's part of the problem too, with policymakers have this very narrow view of education, very narrow view, this one size fits all, just have everybody standardized and we're all going to turn out, wonderful. And it just doesn't work that way. And we need something that's showing the other side. And who better than tell that story than the teachers who are in those classrooms, who know the messiness, who know the complexity, who know what is happening there and are also learning through that complexity. just so important. It's not just as messy and complex. It's that there's learning that goes on there because of that. So the stories, you know, they depict hurdles, they depict possibilities, challenges, and successes. And each of these stories is a thread that helps us understand that larger tapestry of education. You know, although it's been designed, implemented, and done here by students and faculty, teachers, colleges, it's really intended for all educators and the general public to put a human face, on the work of teachers and students, to get away just from the statistics and to show this is what happens in classrooms.
Nice. So if I'm a teacher and I want to get involved, what do I do at Story? How's it work?
All right. So what makes Story work is that teachers share their stories. I mean, it's pretty much as simple as that. They're short anecdotes focused on a key event that caused them to pause and think in different ways about their practice. I mean, for an example, we have one teacher who wrote about a student he called David, and they're all pseudonyms that we use here. A young man who was in his instrumental course, okay, who was trying to learn guitar, but the student seemed not to be practicing. And so after first assuming, he just assumed that David was being negligent, all right? And the teacher further investigated, though, and realized that David was the oldest child of four in a single mother household. And as that oldest child, he had a lot of responsibility and family obligations that were taking up his time. He was doing all that, plus carrying an AP schedule as well. It's a wonder had he had any time to practice guitar, as much as he might have wanted to do it. And so getting an insight like that, starting to understand that students, you know, I've often had teachers tell me, oh, students bring a lot of baggage. And I would often say back to teachers, yeah, and you come baggage free? you know, we all have stories and things that we bring into the classroom. We don't drop our personalities at the door and suddenly come in and become these perfect learning machines. So how do we work all that out? And you know, there was a teacher who moved from teaching middle school students to teaching the same students in high school and realized he needed to adjust his teaching practices to acknowledge change expectations that students and parents had. He was no longer working with middle school students and parents now wanted him really help them get into college. So with that, you know, the fun stuff you were doing in middle school wasn't working. And he had to find a way to kind of negotiate the middle ground there. One teacher wrote about trying to pick up the pieces the day after 2016 election. Another wrote about her need to raise questions about the political nature of common school practices. Mm. You know, what all these stories have in common is a teacher being both confident and vulnerable enough to share a complex wobble moment in an attempt to make meaning. And I think you need to be both to write these stories. You have to be vulnerable. You have to be willing to share practice that is a little messy and complex, but you also have the confidence to know that this is important. But teachers and educators also use the site as a means of professional development. NWP's Christina Cantrell uses a story in a course she teaches as a way to help emerging teachers imagine the complexity of teaching. They read these stories and then they have a protocol to unpack them and think about them. What are they, you know, because pre-service teachers have a very black and white view of what teaching is. They don't really get an understanding of the complexity until you start doing it more. A district rep for the Pennsylvania chapter, NEA, is also using it to provide teachers with examples of how to look closely at practice and learn through it.
Bob, two things. Can you tell us a couple reasons why you think this practice and this website are important, and then close by letting us know how a teacher could add to it?
Sure. I think it has a lot of uses. I've just mentioned the one, that idea that people are using it for professional development. And I think that would get, if it's only used for that alone, that's a powerful reason. But it's also a research site. We'd like to look across these stories. What are we learning about what goes on in classrooms and how teachers make sense of what's going on there? We hope to use it, as part of policy making, to be able to juxtapose these stories against statistical data. The show is not just about quantification, but also qualification. I think for public relations, for when people want to write public service and op-ed pieces, these stories are accessible for that. I think, if nothing else, as a means of catharsis, writing these stories, I think, are powerful ways for teachers to think about and reflect on. You know, you can think about a story, but until you get it down in writing, writing this meaning-making activity and forces you to think about it in ways that just thinking about it doesn't facilitate. And finally, I think it provides counter narratives to narrow views of education that are out there in the media and the government. We need so much of that, particularly now. It's a really easy process. We have an easy Google form on the site where you fill out the information and you put your story right into the Google form. We'll get back to you as quickly as we can with suggestions for improving the story. And they are suggestions, but mostly it's just about trying to get the story told in the best way. And then you make adjustments. And if we all agree it's ready to go, we publish. The key is to, when you're sending something in, to hone in on a single event, not to write in generalities. It's that single event, that focus, that really makes these sing to people. Mm-hmm. And so far, everybody who submitted has already has been published. So, this is not about weeding people out. This is about trying to get people online and get their stories up there. You can access the site, I know, through the at the end of this, but I'll just say it again. It's edblogs, edblogs.columbia.edu/story, STORRI.
Thank you, Bob. As you know, as I tell you every time I see you, this website really captures my attention as a totally new forum dedicated to teachers sharing their stories and taking their practice public. I think anybody listening can see how sharing this can help people develop their knowledge, that they like share their own knowledge with other people, but also, as you said, by writing it, gain knowledge about their own classrooms and practices, inquire about the relationship between their ideas and their practices, and stimulate a professional conversation. So I'm thrilled that it's out there. I'm glad people are using it. And I would encourage everybody in the who is in a classroom to share stories in this space and grow the sort of number and sets of stories that you have.
Please send them in, make my life busy. I'll appreciate it.
That's so great. Thanks again, Bob. Finally, we're going to bring in Rachel Baer. She's my NWP colleague. I also fangirl her work a lot. And she's been thinking about and working with teachers about how to take their teaching practice public in the context of a national initiative focused on improving students' argument writing. So Rachel's going to talk to us about lesson study and the way it's been used in the C3WP initiative. Rachel, so everybody gets a chance to know you too. Can you start by introducing yourself in the way that both Bob and Mitch did? Tell us about your history with the Writing Project and about taking your teaching practice public.
Sure, thank you, Tanya. So I was a high school English teacher here in Boise, Idaho for 10 years, and actually got connected with my local Writing Project site, the Boise State Writing Project, after my first year of teaching. And just like Mitch said, he's not exaggerating when he says it changed his life. I would say, similar to people and very honestly, that I don't think I would have stayed in teaching without being connected with the Writing Project site. So it was hugely transformative. And then I participated in our Summer Institute in 2007. And I remember very clearly my teaching demonstration and the time it took to prepare, and then once it was finished, and how incredibly validating it was for me to have people, to give feedback on me going public with my practice, because honestly, I thought I had nothing to share and nothing that people were interested in, especially as a relatively new teacher. And so when it was well received, I knew as soon as I was finished, even though it was very scary, that I did want to go public with my practice, and that I was interested in doing professional development and writing about my teaching. And so for years after that, as I continued teaching full time, I was able to do professional development around the state. you know, and yoga practice public in various ways. And then a few years later, I started working on national programs. And for Tanya, I'm definitely a fangirl of yours. So I'll send that back because Tanya was leading the very first national initiative that I was involved in. And I was like, man, this lady knows what she's doing. I want to be like that when I grow up. So then I, one of those programs I got connected with was the College Ready Writers Program, which was the original name for what's now the College Career and Community Writers Program, or C3WP. And so in part of that program, I, on the leadership team, I also wrote about my teaching and was able to develop instructional resources to share with other teachers. And then I started working full-time for NWP in August of 2015, working on various programs with a large focus on C3WP.
Thanks, Rachel. That's awesome. And I'm blushing a little bit. Thank you for those kind words. We are going to focus on a slice of C3WP work that you've where you've incorporated lesson study. And I'm sure most of our listeners have heard of or are familiar with lesson study, but out in the world beyond NWP, it's often seen as a formalized way of making teaching practice public. Lesson study was developed in Japan, where teachers improve their teaching through lesson study, a process in which they jointly plan, observe, analyze, and then refine actual classroom lessons that they sometimes call research lessons. Lesson study is widely credited for the steady improvement of Japanese elementary mathematics and science instruction. Rachel, you've been largely responsible for activating lesson study as a part of NWP's C3WP initiative. First, can you tell us a little bit more about what C3WP is?
Sure. So C3WP is a National Writing Project professional development program that includes instructional resources and formative assessment tools. It's gone through several iterations of the program funded by various federal funding. And at the latest count, C3WP has been implemented by middle and high school teachers in 41 states. At the most basic level, it's really about equipping students to thrive in the challenging environment we find ourselves in now, where they are often bombarded with information from various sources, and asked to, or hopefully asked to, join larger conversations around issues that matter and to make informed arguments. So, and our approach to argument writing starts with really having students understand multiple points of view, to analyze evidence and help students to take responsible civic action coming from informed positions and evidence-based positions. So at its core, it really supports students in navigating an increasingly dense informational world so that they can become informed citizens who are really prepared to participate in and ultimately strengthen democracy. So that's really like the goal overall of the program. But typically how it works is that in line with the National Writing Project model of a network is writing project sites, local writing project sites, lead professional development for teachers that's supported by the National Writing Project and leadership team members. So it's in the places in that the writing project sites lead the professional development and that they tailor to their context. And really that those teachers are given support in integrating the core values and key design principles of the program, the instructional resources, and the formative assessment tools.
And so there are a lot of curricular resources available through C3WP, but the program is more than a packaged curriculum. So how is lesson study implemented in C3WP?
Yeah, so that's such a good point because there are the materials that are available, but the professional development is key to that process. And there's much for teachers to choose from and to adapt and use in different ways in their own classroom. So everything's very open to those teacher contexts. So how lesson study works as part of the program is that, like I mentioned earlier, the professional development happens at the local writing project site. But as we expanded the program in these different iterations and reached out to more and included more sites and teachers, we saw this real potential to connect teachers across the country who were participating in local C3WP programs. So just to give you an example, in 2016-17, we had 15 writing project sites leading advanced institutes around C3WP at their local places. So you have 51 writing project sites. Each one had, you know, between 10 and 20 participating teachers. That's a lot of teachers who are inquiring into these materials in different contexts across the country. So, and a lot of times, especially in this model, you may be the only teacher in your school who's participating in C3WP. Like, you'll go to your local writing project workshop or professional development, but you might go back to your school and be the only person doing it there, at least early on. So in this group, as we saw this potential to connect, we created a Google Plus community and invited all facilitators and participants to join. So that first community has now even over 750 members of people who were inquiring into C3WP. So we saw there's a real potential there to not only to connect people generally, but to come together specifically in this way based on this original model of lesson study that you mentioned, Tanya, to connect people who were engaging in this. So basically each instructional resource is a relatively short sequence of instruction that focuses on developing a specific number of skills. And ideally teachers would teach at least four of these resources over the course of the school year to really develop a culture of argument and this type of argumentation for students as part of what we call cycles of instruction. And so the idea behind the lesson study was that teachers would plan on teaching one instructional resource around this a scheduled time frame. So we as a leadership team would pick a resource that seems like people would be teaching it around a certain time in the year. We'd set up the time frame, and then teachers could respond if they were interested and it was going to work for them either to teach it or to just participate and, you know, whatever level they're comfortable to lurk or to give feedback or to ask questions or to actually teach the resource and share about their teaching publicly in the Google Plus community. A lot of times there would be C3WP leadership team members or teachers who had years experience with the program also teaching it alongside the teachers and posting and participating. But basically the idea is that you would teach it around the same time and that teachers would get an open invitation and also specific prompts for sharing how it goes. So posting pictures, sharing stories, student examples, sharing student writing, reflections, questions, and then get feedback from other teachers who are teaching it or people who are thinking about teaching it later. So really was this exciting idea about connecting teachers across the country and giving them the shared experience around the resources. So, the organization of the lesson study is typically that an invitation goes out, people RSVP if they're interested in participating, and then they get prompts through email and through the Google Plus community to share, and they could share whatever they're comfortable with. I mean, many teachers would share every single day, so they would teach a lesson and then share exactly how it went and get feedback and ask questions, and other people would respond, and others would, you know, share once or twice over the course of the lesson study or pick it up later and jump in. So it's designed to be something that people can pick up at various times and join in and share their practice and get ideas from other people.
And what or how have teachers learned by making their practice public in this way, do you think?
Mm-hmm. Well, one thing that I think is really important and powerful about this model, of any model of lesson study like this, is something that came from one of our leadership team members, Linda Denstadt, who said, the best way to coach and support teachers is in the midst. So like in the midst of the moment, as we're learning and teaching before the lesson or at lunchtime, like we actually had teachers who would jump in at lunchtime and say, geez, I taught this activity for first and second period and it didn't go as I planned. Like, do people have ideas of how I could make it better for the rest of the day? And there would be other so many people involved that they could jump in that moment in the midst when we can also think about whatever, like all the things that are amazing and challenging that happen in classrooms when you're teaching. So it's a way to support teachers to take risks, to put things out there, and to get feedback from others who are doing the same work or thinking about doing the same work moving forward. Across the board, when we get feedback from teachers about what was valuable to them, it's this thing about professional conversations about teachers and people saying, like, I just loved being able to talk with others about materials that we recognize and that we've seen, and to be part of this professional conversation and to share materials. And then, you know, having ideas and comments that validated what they did when they taught the lesson. And there's from one teacher who wrote in her final reflection after she participated, she said, "Google Plus was my favorite part of this project. The community building part was the best. It was easy to ask other participants questions or bounce ideas off of each other. Replies were varied and quick. So it's a great forum for collaborating with lots of different people from around the country. And I love to see the pictures of other teachers' classrooms and their students. It reinforced the idea that we are all working toward the same goals and we all care about our students' investment and success all across the country."
That's lovely. Who wouldn't want to be part of that? That's fantastic. Thanks, Rachel. I wonder also if very briefly you might tell us if you have seen or made any changes in the C3WP materials based on a lot of teachers' usage and then iteration and feedback.
Yeah, absolutely. So that's a thing to say too that I wish I should have said earlier about the resources, that these are all teacher created resources from Writing Project teachers, and that we as a leadership team are always looking for ways to make them better and to revise them and create new adaptations. So lots of things have happened as we see teachers try them out in their classrooms. One thing is that teachers naturally create adaptations and supports for their own students given particular contexts. And so we get, you know, new note catchers or new slideshow resources or new ideas for writing prompts that we then add to the materials as they make sense and where they seem to fit. So also new text sets. So most of our resources have text sets attached to them, and but we welcome people to create new ones. So lots of times teachers try out the materials and they create new text sets that they share widely in the Google Plus community and that we can also add to our own resources themselves. So we're always looking for ways to make these resources better. We find we always, you know, a lot of times teachers are teaching them in their classrooms and they're making the adjustments themselves, mm-hmm. but we don't get to see those always. But in this larger lesson study, it's really simple for a teacher to say, "Hey, look, I made this new note catcher for today's lesson and it worked really well. Or I tried out these question stems, or I made a new exit ticket," and then we can gather from those really great ideas and make the resources even better.
Fantastic. We started at the top of the hour with a discussion of the teaching demonstration, which has been a central part of the National Writing Project's Invitational Summer Institutes as a way for teachers to learn their practice, learn from each other's practices, connect their practices to theories, and to have stimulate conversations among teachers about their work. We know that not every teacher can find their way to a summer institute and the opportunity to share their make their practice public in that way. And through the Building New Pathways to Leadership work at the National Writing Project, we've really been working on expanding making many more opportunities for teachers to participate in the practices that we think are important to becoming a teacher leader. And I really want to thank the three of you for sharing these ideas and forums and opportunities for teachers to take their teaching practice public in ways that allow whole communities of teachers to learn and grow their practices. We are really at the very end of the hour, so I'd like to close with a thank you and a goodbye, and I'm sure that we'll see each other in one of these many forums in the world. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Tanya.
You're listening to NWP Radio, a production of the National Writing Project. NWP.